breed, breed, bucks, bucks.
As we prepare for the early days of spring, there are many examples of perfection coming to an independent bookstore near you. So it's time for Book Picks. This morning, Joan Grenier joins us to present just a lovely list of books that will have you enjoying the book, flipping pages, being excited, as yes, you should be. It is a great pleasure to welcome Joan from the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts, to our program this morning. How are you?
Hi, Joe. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much.
It's so good to be back on the book show.
Yeah, well, we're delighted to have you. I know it's been a tumultuous. Someone reminded me today, just moments ago, that today was the first day we started. A year ago today was the first day we started doing all remote, no in-studio guests. So,
we closed the store a year ago tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here we are, and I'm very glad you're back. I miss you horribly, and I thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
I'm
going to start with Donna Leon, who we had the pleasure of hosting in conversation with Joe Donahue yesterday. And it was a marvelous event, although we briefly lost Joe when his dog, his very clever dog, muted him, but it was just a brief moment.
Something about that real quick. I had a headset in, and my lovely 10-year-old lab Brady decided he's going to do what he always does, which is lay on my feet. So I didn't realize, I'm not used to wearing a headset. So the dog comes in and just plunks down. But as he does, he's like a 120-pound dog. So as he did it, I don't know if you noticed, Joan, but my face, because it was connected to the headset, just went lurching toward the screen and hit the like it was just like a view of the camera like in my nose. It was lovely. All very nice. Yeah, and then we were disconnected. But thank you for your patience. And she was lovely and sweet and so nice and smart and amazing.
Yeah, well, it was fascinating to hear how Donna Leon stumbled onto writing her first mystery, and how these small incidents can evolve into full mysteries with various turns and twists. The new book, it's the 30th, is Transient Desires, and she is one of my favorite mystery writers, and I've been trying to get her for years, so I was really happy that we finally got her.
Yeah.
And it's another fantastic Commissario Guido Brunetti mystery. And Venice is one of the main characters, as always, along with Guido and his family and his fellow officers. Some of my personal favorite characters, besides Guido, of course, are the Neapolitan Commissario Claudia Grifoni. And there's some kind of tenseness between Naples and Venice and accents and food and everything. So that's always interesting in the book. And then there's Signorina Electra, who is the world's best hacker without telling Guido where she gets the information. And in this book, the Coast Guard works with Guido to apprehend smugglers and to liberate their cargo. So it's another expose of the underbelly of one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And as Donna was saying, you know, Guido is kind and intelligent. He's not one of these dysfunctional detectives. And the violence often takes place off stage, similar to a Greek drama.
Right.
And the neighborhoods of Venice are often characters. And the food, I mean, he goes home for lunch, has a nice leisurely lunch and wonderful dinners. And it's just an amazing series. And also he has to deal with his incompetent boss, so he's always kind of not filling him in on what's really going on, even though the boss might take the credit.
Yes.
And Donna was saying that she's nearly completed the next installment and our plans for another book. And so we can look forward to many more adventures with Guido. And Joe, thank you so much for interviewing her. I really appreciate it.
Well, it was a great pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity, as always. I had a lot of fun. She is really something. And we'll, I wish I had the date. Maybe by the end of the segment, I'll have the date at my fingertips of when that show will air. In fact, I will make sure that happens. But it's Transient Desires is the name of the book by Donna Leon. And it's just terrific. It's Atlantic Monthly Press. All right, next.
Well, I'm going to talk about a poetry book, which I often don't feel competent enough to talk about it. But one of my favorite poets has a new book. His name is Martina Spada. The book is called Floaters. Martina is originally from Brooklyn. He's the author of 15 books of poetry. He won the Ruth Willey Poetry Prize, and he teaches at UMass Amherst. And this collection, as always, includes political poems about immigration, youth incarceration, racism, strikes, even a poem about Sacco and Vanzetti, along with love poems and poems about his Puerto Rican family, and a poem about his father, who recently died, and the photograph on the cover is from his father. Floaters, I'm just going to read a little bit, refers to, well, I'll just start. This is from a post by Border on a Border Patrol Facebook group. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and ask, have you ever seen floaters this clean? I'm not trying to be an ass, but I have never seen floaters like this. Could this be another edited photo? We've all seen the Dems and Liberal parties do some pretty sick things. And from that, Martin has written an amazing poem about who these two people are, Oscar, who's 25, and his daughter, Angie, who was only 23 months old. And they are from El Salvador. And, of course, they're trying to get to this country to have a better life. So that's Floaters by Martina Spada.
All right, Floaters. That sounds amazing. Next up.
Robert Jones, Jr., The Prophet.
Oh, I love this. Oh, I love this book. This is one of my favorite books. It's amazing.
It was one of my favorite books, although I feel like I have to read it again because there's just so much going on in this book.
There is.
So it's a debut novel, and Robert Jones Jr. has a pretty huge social media platform, and it's called The Son of Baldwin. And he praises the path forged by Toni Morrison and James Baldwin and gives them credit for his desire to write and to write about white supremacy. So this is set in antebellum Mississippi, and he explores the many manifestations of the brutality of slavery. I think for me, in a novel, this is one of the fullest pictures I have read. The violence, the constant fear, the danger, the tearing apart of families, rape of black women, beatings, forcing black men to have sex with black women to procreate for the master. But also the resistance in small and large ways. We hear the voices of the slaves, the African ancestors, and the white slaveholders. This is very multidimensional and really detailing the world of Southern slavery. The main characters are Samuel and Isaiah. They're two young slaves in love who work with the animals and live in the barn. This gives them some privacy and some independence, but it also makes them targets. The slaves aptly called the plantation Empty, with a capital E. It's surrounded by dense woods, and escape is treacherous and nearly impossible. And I really feel like I need, this is one of those books that you want to keep rereading. I think it's a novel that readers and book clubs will have far-reaching discussions about. Absolutely. And it was one of our first edition selections.
It's a very special
book. Did you get a chance to interview him?
Yeah, we have. I did. I got it. We talked to him a few weeks ago on our book show. And you can go online and just put in Robert Jones and WAMC and it'll come right up.
Okay, I
want to
do that.
People can listen to it. He's amazing. Really an incredible guest, but an incredible novelist and a book I just adore. It's The Prophets by Robert Jones, Jr. Next.
The next book is The Removed by Brandon Hobson. This is set in present-day Oklahoma and explores the life of a Cherokee family, along with the history of the Trail of Tears, the forced migration from the southeast of Cherokee, Choctaw, Crees, Chickasaw, and Seminoles in the 1820s to 1840s, and that opened the land for cotton plantations. Andrew Jackson played a major role in this. So the family is the Achota family, and they're coming together for their annual bonfire to remember Ray Ray, along with the Cherokee National Holiday. 15 years earlier, their son and brother, Ray Ray, was killed when a police officer instinctively fired at the Indian and then was cleared of the crime. This murder has deeply scarred the entire family. There's Sonia, his sister, who works at a library, but was quite adrift and makes some reckless decisions. Edgar, a younger brother, is in Albuquerque and really in bad shape, addicted to meth and other drugs. Maria, the mom, is a retired social worker with her husband, Ernest, who's in the early stages of Alzheimer's. There's also a foster child that they take in for a few days, Wyatt, and he reminds them so much of Ray Ray. A second narrative is told by Tisala, an ancestor murdered during the Indian Removal Act. So myth and history are interwoven with the contemporary life in Oklahoma. This is a powerful book that tells an important story with great writing. This is the first book I've read by him, but he has several others that I want to go back and read.
Terrific. Sounds wonderful. I'm not familiar, so that sounds great. The Removed by Brandon Hobson. All right.
Okay. And one of the last books I want to talk about is another First Edition Club selection. It's The Lowering Days by Gregory Brown. It's another debut novel from a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop who lives in Maine. It's set in Maine in the Penobscot River area, and it is narrated by one of the sons, David Ames, who's reflecting on his childhood in the 1980s and 90s in Maine. And it revolves around several families. David's mother, Fallon, is the editor of a community newspaper, The Lowering Days, that's the title. His father, Arno, is a builder of boats by hand and a Vietnam War deserter. And then he has two twin brothers, Link and Simon. The other family that lived just through the woods are Grace and Lyman Creel. He's a lobster man, and now he's a Vietnam vet with four tours. His family owned the paper mill that features prominently in the book, but he decided not to join the family. And they have two children. Grace and Lyman have two children, Galen and Wren. And the two mothers, Grace and Fallon, are lifelong friends. It's nearly an idyllic childhood spent in the woods and on the river. But that is shattered when a bankrupt paper mill, recently purchased by the Japanese and set to reopen, once the largest employer in the Penobscot Valley, is burned to the ground on the eve of when it is going to open. As the community grapples with the scope of the devastation, Fallon receives a letter from a Penobscot teenager confessing to the crime, an act of justice for a sacred river under centuries of assault. The teenager, Molly, and her father, Adam, are on the run, and they're aided by Penobscot fisherman Moses. The mill and the fire divide the townspeople. On the one hand, it provides good jobs, but on the other hand, it spews toxic chemicals which kill fish and plants. The language is beautiful in this book, and the issue raised in this book will resonate with many readers: land reparations and environmental cleanup. I just love this book, and we had a great virtual event with Gregory And it really makes you think about, you know, New England and Native Americans and what happened to these people. And I mean, they're still around, but a lot of them have lost their land.
The name of the book is The Lowering Days by Gregory
Brown. The Lowering Days.
We have about a minute, Joan.
Well, I have one book that I'm reading, and I wanted to mention it because I think everybody should read it. It's The Sum of Us, What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together by Heather McGee. And she has, I mean, there's something like 100 pages of endnotes, and she has really pulled together history along with reports and interviews just about how racism is, you know, one of our original sins. One of the stories that she tells is about swimming pools. In the like 50s and 60s, most cities, towns had public swimming pools. And then with desegregation, many of those were closed and actually paved over. And that's when you start to see backyard swimming pools or private swimming clubs instead of having black and white children swim together.
Mm.
And so she has a lot of details like that. My book club is going to be discussing this at the end of the month, and it's on the bestseller list now. So it's a book it's very accessible with a lot of great information.
The name of the book is The Sum of Us, What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together by Heather McGee. All of these books were mentioned are from Odyssey Bookstore in South Hadley, Massachusetts. You can visit them online, odysseybks.com, odysseybks.com. Find them on our list. Joan, thank you.